Thanks for listening to The Rivers Podcast. For more information on this teaching, visit our website at theriver.info.
And Jesus is talking, as we learned a couple weeks ago, to those who said yes to him. This isn't just the religious leaders who are putting up their fists and wanting to fight. These are people who once said yes to Jesus, much like many of you in here. Unlike most of you, hopefully, in here, they were confronted by the teachings of Jesus, and instead of walking out their yes, they began to buck the system, and they began to argue with Jesus, and they began to attack him because they wanted Jesus to stay in their box. They wanted Jesus to stay in their box. And you see that the attack last week and the week before, it gets pretty intense. Here's what we know. When we are most threatened, we attack the most. Right? Have you ever heard that phrase, like, you know, you fight like a cornered animal? Right? I mean, the animal, when it gets backed into the corner, feels very threatened, so they're going to lash out. When there's no way out, they start lashing back. So these folks were confronted in their thinking of the ways of the Lord. They didn't like it, and they lashed out. And so Jesus says to these people who have been lashing out and arguing and attacking him, Jesus said to them, John chapter 8, verse 42, "If God were your Father, you would love me, for I have come here from God. I've not come on my own. God sent me." He is saying to these people who are rejecting him, "We don't like you." This is a bold claim that he's making. He's saying that you can't be a lover of God and not be a lover of Jesus. Let's just be clear. What was true then is true today. To be a lover of God is to be a lover of Jesus. They are inseparable. If God is our Father, there must be a love for this Jesus. Here's this: all that have God for their Father have a true love for Jesus, and they esteem his person and a grateful sense of his love, a sincere affection to his cause and kingdom, a complacency in the salvation wrought out by him and the method and terms of it, and a care to keep his commands, which is the surest evidence of our love to him. That's an old dead person's way of saying, if you want to love God, love Jesus. Yeah. But they were bucking the system. They did not want to love Jesus. And I wonder if this Jesus was a bit too personal for them. I wonder if when he began to speak of things, they felt threatened in their business. You see, I think they are a bit like us. They wanted to keep God at arm's length because they wanted a Jesus and a discipleship that did not impede their personal desires and aspirations. But there's a sense of Jesus in discipling, where he wants to get into the business of his disciples. He wants to turn their understandings and their aspirations upside down, and these folks bucked at that. Jesus would say this. He would say at another place in the Gospel of Matthew, "If anyone," somebody say anyone, "desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross." And they didn't like this teaching because they wanted a Jesus that was convenient and not in their business. If you loved God, you would love me, he says. And so for the umpteenth time in the Gospel of John, Jesus is calling them to account. I am either the Lord, or C.S. Lewis says, a what? Liar. And what's the other one? A lunatic. And this was really offensive to them. He is saying that I too am part of God, and you have to love me in order to love God. And he's putting it on the table for the umpteenth time that I am God, and I'm either the Lord, a liar, or a lunatic. And these folks did not like it. It was a radical claim, and it's still a radical claim today. And he will not let them off the hook. I remember it was 1996, back in the day when I had hair. Can you picture that with me? It was a good day. I was fresh out of seminary. I was 25 years old, and I moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan to work at Third Reformed Church as a part of the Reformed Church. Every quarter, the Reformed Church has these big gatherings where all the Reformed churches send representatives to this thing called classis. You think it's hard to sit through a 9 a.m. service on a Sunday morning? Woo! These classis meetings introduced me to something that I had never in my life heard of before, or maybe heard of in the distance. Has anyone ever heard of Robert's Rules of Order? How many of you have never heard of Robert's Rules of Order? Oh my gosh, they're horrible. I mean, it's a way of doing a meeting, I guess, that keeps order and function going. And I remember sitting there as a young, fresh out of seminary person, like, this seems like a very boring and not engaging way to go about church business. You couldn't say anything without saying, I make a motion, and you couldn't proceed in your motion unless somebody seconded the motion. And then you had discussion on whether the motion was preceded or accepted or not, and if they accepted your motion, then you could actually discuss the motion, and then you had to vote on it, but you couldn't just say, we agree. You had to say, I, and if you disagreed, what did you have to say? No, that's not what they did. They would say, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign, is what they would say. So if you're opposed, you're also supposed to say aye. It was just confusing. But one thing I remember that's helpful to our task today is after things got a little boring and long, somebody would stand up and say, I call the question. And I loved that. And I thought of doing it every single time we got into these long discussions. When the question was called, they had to vote upon whether they accepted the calling of the question, of course, because it was a motion. Somebody had to second the motion, they had to discuss the motion, and then they had to vote on the question. And if they agreed that the question was indeed actually called, then no more discussion was had, and you had to get to the point, and you had to vote yes or no, because sometimes even Robert, in his rules of order, realizes that enough talk is enough, and you got to make a decision. Woo! What Jesus is saying here when he says, I am from the Father, I didn't come on my own, and if you love God, you've got to love me. He is calling the question to a bunch of the people who would like to just talk around things. He is calling the question saying, who do you say that I am? It's not enough for you to follow me in lip service. You've got to follow me with everything, and I'm going to get in there, and I'm going to turn your world upside down. You can't just talk about things of faith. You got to make a decision and commit. I'm calling the question. And so I'm wondering if in the spirit of John chapter 8, the question is being called in your life today. Who do you say that he is? Do you love Jesus the way Jesus called these people to love him? I didn't come on my own, but I came from the Father, he says. And then he goes on to say, why is my language not clear to you? Any of you have children? Yeah. Do any of you recently, have you said something very clear? Please do not do this. You walk away, and what does the child do? The thing you just said. And you go back to me and say, "What was that not clear?" It's the same here. Jesus isn't speaking astrophysics. He's not even speaking calculus. Praise God, Jesus doesn't even talk about math. Amen? He's saying something very clear, and it's easy to understand but hard to accept. He's saying, I am God. And they didn't like it, and I think we're kind of like them. When we hear that thing that we hear, it's clear, but when we don't like it, we pretend like it's difficult to understand. He goes, why is my language not clear to you? Because you're unable to hear what I say. You know, it's true, sometimes the things of Jesus seem confusing, not because they're confusing, but because they're difficult to understand. See, these folks right here, they're pretending to be a part of God. They were in the company of Jesus, listening to teaching. They were in the company of Jesus, listening to teachings of Jesus, but they didn't let the teachings of Jesus permeate their soul. They didn't recognize the heavenly language of Jesus. So let's allow the Spirit to get in our business a little bit. It's possible to be sitting in a gathering of people talking about Jesus' things and not get Jesus deep down in the heart. I want you to mentally pull out your mental mirror, and I want you to look at it, and I want you to be honest. Are you like them in any way? Where the teachings of Jesus hit you and you either just kind of turn a blind eye to them, you plug your ears, or do they fall off your back like a water off a duck's back? And does anybody know if that's true? I have never seen a duck with a wet back. Somebody do research. Get back to me. You see, understanding the things of Jesus in and of itself is an act of grace. You know, when we understand the things of Jesus, it's because Jesus himself has given us grace to understand. Now remember, Jesus in this part of the scriptures is incredibly concerned with the afterlife and the current life of these people. He's concerned that they understand the truth. So he pulls no punches. Have you ever heard of the phrase come to Jesus moment? Has anybody ever had a come to Jesus moment? What happens right here is maybe the first come to Jesus moment when these people came to actual Jesus. And because he wants them to get it, he doesn't kind of hem and haw. He goes right after the truth because it's so important for Jesus, for them to get it, that he's less concerned about peace in the moment and more concerned about truth in life. And so a come to Jesus moment, he says to them, somebody say yikes. Preemptively say yikes. He says to these folks who are not getting it, who are arguing with him, he says, you belong to your father. That's not bad. Comma. The devil. Whoa. You belong to your father, the devil. See, there's two options, and Jesus is calling them out in this come to Jesus moment. There's two options. Either you follow me, or you're a child of the devil. Somebody say, oh. I kind of wish that wasn't true today. I kind of wish there was some gray in there. I wish that we could kind of fudge it around a little bit because that seems a little exclusive, doesn't it? See, but Jesus is so concerned about their hearts and their future that he doesn't want them to miss it, and so he goes after it in the very first come to Jesus moment. He says, you're of your father, the devil. And as hard as it is for us to maybe hear that today, it comes with an invitation to become a child of Jesus. So the question has to be asked today. Have you become a child of Jesus? Or are you like them dancing around the things of God without fully embracing the things of Jesus? He goes on to say, and you want to carry out your father's desires. Do you remember back on January 27th what we preached on? Anybody? It's the Gospel of John, right? Yeah. I remember saying then back there, he was saying hard words back then as well. And they're words that speak of future judgment. These words here when Jesus says, you are of your father, the devil, and you want what he desires, these are not words of judgment, they are words of fact. And we talked back on January 27th, as I'm sure all of you remember it crystal clearly, that there will be a day when the judgment of Jesus comes. It's the end of time when Jesus' judgment will come upon everybody who has walked away from him. But these words today aren't words of judgment. They're sobering words of fact to kind of shake us up so that we can walk into the grace that Jesus is pouring out for all of us. But when we walk away from the truth of Jesus, we remove ourselves from the grace that he has. And these tough words aren't judgment words yet, but they're words that say, come on back into grace so that you don't desire the things of your Father. He has a message of grace. Turn around. It's a hard truth for the sake of something good. I believe there are people in this room right now who have been running from hard truths. I think there's people in that section over there. Everybody point to that section. Everybody point to this section. I think there's people in this group too, and this one right here, and maybe that one, and certainly in the balcony. There are people in this room who have been running from hard truths because hard truths are called hard truths because they're hard truths. And we need to embrace the hard truths. I remember what Brad said last week when he was up on stage. He said, we don't know that which we don't know, right? And there's some blind spots in our world where we need the community of faith to point out those things, the hard truths, like Jesus is pointing out hard truths to these folks. And I think maybe the Lord is saying, hey, open your ears to hear the hard truth. Don't be like these folks who in lip service say they follow Jesus, but in practicality they do not follow him. And so don't run from the hard truth any longer. I also think there's people in this room, certainly in that section. I mean, look at that section. Gee whiz. Who've been running from speaking hard truth. Nobody in this section. You guys got it going on. Way to go. Yeah, you guys are slackers over there. Yeah. See, God has called us to be about his business, and sometimes we need to hear the hard truth, but sometimes God gives us the hard truth to speak to those who need it. And yet, I know there are people who are hearing this right now who believe there's a thing that needs to be spoken or revealed to that loved one, but it's not being spoken because to speak a hard truth might be harder than to hear a hard truth. And so we sacrifice truth for peace. But when truth is sacrificed for peace, that peace is only superficial and not deep. And so maybe you need to take the example of Jesus and to, with kindness and wisdom and gentleness, speak the truth in love, because there are people in your world who need you to speak truth. Jesus continues to drive it home in this come to Jesus moment. He says, your father, he was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Now, he's talking about them being this guy's children, but he's shifting a little bit in the teaching, and he wants us to be clear on the theology of the realm of the spirit. See, not only is there a God in heaven, but there's a devil in action as well. And he says, from the beginning, well, probably not from Satan's beginning, because Satan was an angel at the beginning, and the Bible shows in Revelation 12 that he was cast down. But at the beginning of human history, he was a liar and a murderer, right? You know his story maybe in Genesis chapter 3. He's hell-bent on the destruction of people. He's a murderer. And Jesus ups the ante here. He says, you can't keep me at arm's length, because when you keep me at arm's length and when you walk in superficial relationship with me, you walk out the will of your father, the devil. And Jesus ups the ante. He says, you've heard that it was said, this is now from Matthew chapter 5, to the people long ago, you shall not commit murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister... Now, let me just stop this, Matthew. Has anybody been angry with a brother or sister recently this week? Ooh. Yeah. Well, my brother's in Massachusetts, so I haven't been angry at him in a long time. But I'm wondering if the brother here is beyond biological. See, the Old Testament talks about actual murder, but Jesus says, hang on, if you're walking as the father, the devil is, when you're angry with your brother or sister, he says, if you say raka, which is an old word for, it's not a very nice word to say, but if you curse your brother, you're guilty of murder and you're liable to judgment. Jesus is saying, if you hold bitterness and anger in your heart towards anyone, you are guilty of walking out the will of the devil and not the will of the Father. Now, that's a sobering truth right there, friends. And I'm wondering if you're courageous enough to have that mirror hold up and say, you know what, I've been bitter and angry towards this person. And so maybe right there is your assignment for the week for you and the Lord to deal with that inner anger, that inner bitterness, and to release it to him however you need to. Maybe you need to go see a therapist. I've got many I can recommend. Because Jesus wants us to walk out his will and not the will of the devil, who is all about anger and murder. You know, some of you ought to just check your own Facebook page and your own discussions you have about people who believe differently than you. Because that type of anger and vitriol is, I think, what Jesus is speaking against right here. The word Satan actually comes from the Hebrew word sitna, which is also the Hebrew word for hatred. And so when we walk out hatred towards people who are different than us or people who have hurt us, when we walk any anger and hatred out, we're actually walking out the ways of Satan. And I just want to let you in on a little clue here. Much of your trouble in life has come from harboring hatred and anger and bitterness towards people. Maybe you need to let it go. So when he lies, he speaks his native language. See, Satan's a murderer, and his biggest weapon is the lie. In Genesis chapter 3, he lied to Eve and Adam, and that lie and their belief in the lie led to murder, to their death. In John chapter 10, we read of this devil, that he comes to steal, kill, and destroy. In Revelation 12, we read of the devil being the accuser of the brethren. He is a liar. And he's opposed to all things that are true. Jesus told us that the truth will set us free. And so Satan brings lies and lies and lies. And you know, our world tells us that these things set us free, not Jesus. You know, fame, fortune, money, position, friends. Those things are valuable and wonderful. But if we pursue those things above the truth of Jesus, they are not helpful for us. When he lies, he speaks his native language. Now, let me ask you this thing. How many of you, keep your hands down, have not nice thoughts about yourself on a regular basis? How many of you wake up and your first several thoughts are not very pleasant towards yourself? I believe those type of lies come from the pit of hell as Satan's effort to bring murder to your soul. Amen. Jesus told us that the truth will set us free, and the truth is that you are dearly loved, a blessed and chosen child of the King, and that he sees you as special. I believe it was Max Lucado who says, if God had a fridge, your picture would be right there on it. And I've said that if God had a wallet, your picture would be right there and he'd be bragging about you to the angels. So the liar of our souls wants to lie about us, to us, so that we think less of ourselves. But God says, no, you are precious and dearly loved. The truth will set you free. Jesus continues, because I tell you the truth, you don't believe me. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? See, they're trying to pick him apart, and people have been trying to find sin in Jesus for the past 2,000 years, and they can't. I was reading a book this week of a Muslim convert to Christianity, and he was asked to give a sentence why he converted to Christianity from, you know, Islam. And he said, I studied the life of Muhammad. And there's facts out there, just factual statements. And he goes, the life of Muhammad was not moral. And the life of Muhammad was not freeing. The life of Muhammad was marked by power and control for his own gain. And so I left Islam. And then I studied the life of Jesus. And I fell in love with him. See, these folks are trying to find sin or something to pin on Jesus, and they couldn't do it. And so I encourage you as well, whether you're new to the faith or old to the faith, to study the life of Jesus and see what you find. You will find only that which is beautiful and for you. I'm telling you the truth, Jesus says. Why don't you believe me? Whoever belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you don't hear is that you do not belong to God. And again, at this point, these are factual statements, not judgment statements. The judgment's coming. There's a call to repent and change, to turn it around. Truth will set you free, Jesus says. I am the truth. Come back to him. Which reminds me of a discussion Christine, my wife, and I were having this week. She was listening to Bob Dylan. If you know Christy, that's a funny statement. The song that she recommended as we were talking about this, Bob Dylan wrote the song, says, you gotta serve somebody. Does anybody know that song? Yeah, I never heard of this song. He says, you may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You may like to dance. You may be a heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with long strings of pearls. But you're going to have to serve somebody, yes. Indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. You might be a rock and roll addict prancing on the stage. You might have drugs at your command, woman in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief. But you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, you are. You're going to have to serve somebody. It may be the devil or it may be the Lord. But you're going to have to serve somebody. These people once followed Jesus. They began to disagree because he got too personal. And he said, you're a child of your father, the devil. It's a sobering question for you and I to ask and wrestle with this morning. Who are we serving? And who are we following? See, when there's less of us and we decide to follow Jesus, when there's less of us and more of him, there's more for us. When there's less of me and more of him, there's more for me. When there's more of me and thus maybe unintentionally more of the devil, there's less for us. John chapter 8.
Thanks for listening. For more information, check us out online at theriver.info.